Support local journalism and enjoy full access to the Green Gazette digital edition with a print subscription. Subscribe today at thegazette.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the Opinion Combination Podcast, High School Edition. I'm KJ Pilcher of the Gazette alongside Dick Briggs, ready to break down high school wrestling. Briggs is back. Love seeing it back from vacation. The college edition, we talked a little bit about that, but had to have been a fun time.
Yeah, thank you to Jim Nelson, Nelly, for stepping in. Did a great job. I caught you guys for sure. And I didn't have anyone calling saying that they missed me or anything. So, I mean,
Oh, we missed you. That's for sure. But no, yeah, really appreciate Jim for stepping in. And known Jim for a long time and covered a lot of high school and college events with him. So it was perfect pinch hitter for you. I say that we talked a little bit about baseball last time. So
and honestly, I have to tell you, after listening to you guys, maybe he should be the perfect guy. You guys have so much knowledge and information.
Oh my God.
To listen to you, so you did a great job.
Don't start. Briggsy, you've forgotten more than both of us ever knew.
Man, but you can recall it. You're right. I forgot it. You can recall it.
Well, big weekend last weekend down at Extreme Arena. That's really, I think, really is turned into a fun 3-day event down there, really, when you factor in the 2 days of girls state and then the state duels immediately following it. Really exciting. I think you're seeing just a improvement and huge growth on the girls' side that really makes that fun. But just an exciting event overall, which, you know, it's really grown, and man, it just shows signs of continuing to get better.
Yeah, and a couple of things. One, the girls' union does a really nice job of doing little special things, I think, that engage not just the wrestlers and coaches, but also the fans. You know, bringing out the easel and having them sign it, and you know, the bracket and that sort of thing. It's just, I just think that's really neat. And then KJ, I have to ask you: have you seen a schedule? This big announcement, big huge announcement that they're going to have, the girls are going to start in 2027 their state dual tournament, first state dual tournament. So now that means it's even more important to fill your lineups and get those, you know, so you're not having very many forfeits. And so I'm glad they waited, because I don't know that the teams were quite ready. At least the vast majority of the teams were ready for that. But this will help, you know, with getting some girls out on the team and that sort of thing, you know, push the coaches and the girls that are already out to encourage their friends to join the squads as well. So I like with that. What's the schedule?
So it is going to be held January 22nd.
Oh,
so it's going to be, so it would be the weekend before their regionals, their qualifiers. So 2 weeks ahead of the traditional tournament, a week before their regional meet. So it'll go state duels, probably sometime. I would guess they would do something similar to the boys, where they would have, you know, a dual qualifier maybe earlier that week, maybe even the weekend ahead of that. And then you go state duels, regionals, state tournament.
That makes sense.
I really like that.
Yep. I was worried that they were going to put it on Saturday when the boys theirs. So I'm glad to hear that for the girls' sake, that they're going to have, it's not going to be stacked up like the boys were for so many years.
For sure.
And yeah, so that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. That's super big weekend.
And I'm just going to go back to something that you mentioned about something that the girls do. And of course, you know, I've had a daughter play in the state a basketball tournament. Had a niece do the same. Daughter play the state softball tournament. Covered state tournaments. The girls' union makes it an experience, not just a competition. It's, you know, it's celebrated more. And it's more than just the competition itself. There's all this stuff on the periphery that, you know, that they make it an experience overall, and something that is memorable just beyond the results. And I think that's pretty cool. You know, I could do without all the pink, but
there's a lot,
you know. But it really is. And I mean, that's what it's supposed to do. And I'm not saying the Boys Association doesn't. I think it's just more, you know, it's more competition focused, and not more of a festival kind of a thing, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, you'll see pink shirts on the officials. You'll see a pink whistle. You'll see, I've even seen some officials with pink wristbands. I don't remember if it was at state or not, but you're right. Really? There's a lot of pink out there going on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's fun. And I mean, you can tell. There are, some people have, you know, they don't like signing their brackets, but the majority are there and enjoying it. And I think it's a neat deal. Just things that you never really, I guess I never would have thought of, all those years at Vets and Wells Fargo about doing that they do there at Extreme, which is pretty cool. And then for the championship, you really got to praise the tournament organizers down there, you know, guys like Josh Schomburger, Luke Eustace, I think Kylie Walker. They come out, their little pyro flares that they run through come and turn off to their respective mats and check in, you know. So there's they make it spectacle's not the right
production
word. You know what I mean, a production. Yep. Thank you.
Yep. Make it a production.
You make it a production, and it's awesome because it's it really rewards the competitors that are there.
And I said,
I like it a lot.
Right. It engages the fans and the families up in this, it just makes it special and brings that, you know, added flair. So credit, you know, Aaron Gerlach, you know, who we've had on the show, as the, what's her title? Official title.
Director. Well, now she's the head honcho. She's the head honcho.
Head honcho director. I'm not sure. She's the big dog. So, yeah. Credit her and her team for really doing a great show.
Executive director there. Yep, for sure. Gotta give a shout out to Jason Esslinger and the rest of the staff there too. I mean, they do a great job. And then, you know, on the mat, I mean, boy, before we get into the results, I just have to say that the talent level continues to grow. The product has gotten better, better, and better each year. And what I've told a lot of people now that talked about how much fun and how awesome they thought it was down there, I'm like, now you're going to get freshmen. You see it. You've seen it this year with Abigail Peterson. They're going to be more accomplished and better coming in as freshmen because they've been wrestling for so long, and they, they're that much more advanced in skill and strength and technique, just everything is at a higher level. And I mean, you had a Pan Am age level gold medalist win a state title in dominant fashion. Not saying that's going to be the norm by any means, but the freshmen coming in are going to be a lot more seasoned and a lot better, and it's just going to allow things to skyrocket, continue right. to grow.
Right. Yep. And you're right. As that competition and that skill level improves, you're just going to see it. It's just going to be so much fun to watch the competitiveness, and it's already there. And it's been interesting to see the girls step up and bring it to the mat, really bring that what we're talking about to the mat. So
for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about the results there. Team-wise, in 2A, you had Raccoon River Northwest win it all with 148.5 points. They topped out Gona, who had 112, then Southeast Polk, Ankeny, and Iowa City Liberty. Liberty was a team that we watched. They ended up knocking off Cedar Falls for the MVC title, and they finished fifth with 82.5 points. As we mentioned, Southeast Polk had 109 and Ankeny 105.5. Liberty, I think, had five or six medalists. You know, but Iowa City Liberty, with that was a team that we saw, we thought was really good. We were really impressed with them at Kennedy. And even though they didn't have one of those top, I think they're top two finishers were third. They had a really good tournament.
Right. And coming off of, let's see, they won the Mississippi Valley, right?
Yep.
So, you know, coming off that victory there in the super tournament. Now I gotta say this, since I do have a little bit of information, very little, but some of these schools are these teams, I should say, are multiple schools.
Well, Raccoon River Northwest is a big example there.
Right. I mean, and even Cedar Falls is, you know, has a lot
of really?
Schools as well. So the Raccoon River Valley, I talked to their coach when I was reffing the East Marshall. I just happened to sit down and talk with him just briefly in between matches. There's a long day. But he, you know, so you've got Waukee Northwest. Those are two of the top eight or nine biggest schools in the state. And they and you know, so they combine there. Then you throw in Adel, and you've got some other peripheral schools that anyway. So he did say that there is a plan to, I think it's two or three years down the road, to split those up and go to their own teams then. And I think it needs to happen sooner than that. And you know, because they're a dominant team, and that's good for them. They've got a great program. They're doing a good job, but. You know, you've got, I mean, you look in Cedar Rapids. Are there any teams and schools in Cedar Rapids that are combining? Not that I know of. Unless maybe, I don't even think.
I don't think so.
So, I mean, they're all their own individual schools, you know. So, and the issue I think there was they didn't have a place, you know, they didn't have their own separate a wrestling room to work out in. I'm like, so in two or three years, one of the schools might. And I'm like, neither does any of the schools, or you know, most of the schools around don't have their own.
Right.
specific wrestling room. So I'm like, that does seem kind of lame to me. So I didn't buy that, but you know, it's time for that. Those guys to split up and have their own teams, if you ask me. So that being said, they're a good team. Gosh, are they a good team? How many champs did they have? I don't know, but there was one big upset. That's, I'll let you talk about that one. So,
well, I was just going to, since you were bringing it up, you know, they had Kay Biscaglia going for four titles, made it to the finals, had beaten Lauren Watson of Ankeny twice already this season. I think one was by major. And then they faced each other in the 110 finals in 2A. And boy, you should have heard the audible gasp when Watson kind of hit a neck wrench and a little bit of a scramble and put Biscaglia on her back and then finished off the pin. And I mean, I think it's also funny that I'm calling out a colleague Owen Sebring, somebody I really enjoy a lot from CBS2. Mitch Fick actually posted the video of it, and you can see Owen with his camera filming on the feed. You can see Owen filming, and you just see it when it happens. He's in the background, and as it's going on, he's going, oh. You know, while he's filming. So that, I think, encompasses how that whole arena reacted, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, we're at the other end. I was covering 1A. Our correspondent, Doug Miles, was on the 2A side. But from all the way down on our end, Jim Nelson and I were like, we turned to each other and we're like, what the heck just happened? You know? And I mean, it's fantastic. Somebody asked, as far as girls upsets, it's the biggest. I think it's right up there with when Noonan from Cascade beat Adam Allard in the finals with a last second turn to get near fall points and keep him from his fourth title. You know, I think it's on par with that. I'm not sure if it's exactly Gabrielson light.
I was going to say, we can go way back. We got Brent Hagen, who lost, you know, his fourth. He got, what was that, 74 or 5, 75 maybe. And then Ike Light, yeah. And then you got, I mean, it's just through the years you've had that. You're going to have that. That's what's fun and exciting and, you know, unpredictable. And it was a great move. You're right. And Eck Grinch and Watson. Lauren Watson from Ankeny stepped over, just perfect technique, and applied the pressure and got the pin. So really well done. I mean, it just executed perfectly, unfortunately, for Biscaglia.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about the reactions on the mat. Okay. So fun, I guess. I don't really know how to explain it, or, you know, to see Watson almost be as shocked as everybody while it's settling in what she just did. You know, obviously she's going out there to win, but that realization that I did it, and her turning to her coach, like,
yeah,
you know, and her almost as disbelief, you know, what did I just do? And then she realizes it and runs and jumps in his arms, and, you know, the well-deserved celebration. And then while it's going on, Biscaglia handled it like the three-time champ that she is, where she just calmly collected, got up, went to the center, stood there patiently, no fit, no demonstrate, nothing. She just stood there, waited, let Watson do her thing. Watson came back, they shook hands, and she just slowly walked off to her coach. The reaction was awesome. I think the way Biscaglia handled it, you know, even smiling on the award stand when you know that's the last thing she probably wanted to do, but she handled it with such class. I tip of the cap to both. One, right. Great performance from Watson. Two, Biscaglia, a great chance, you know, finished with over 200 wins and only two losses. Handled it amazingly well, and still four-time finalist, three-time champ.
Right. And so I'll follow that with it. You're exactly right on both ends of it. Both reacted perfectly and with class and dignity. And yet I have to say this. Here's a girl that lost, that had 200 opponents stand up and shake her hand when she whooped them, and probably with class. So I expect that as a coach, I expect that out of my athletes to do that. And when they don't do that, that's when it's bad. So yeah, I don't know. So what I'm saying is when I have an athlete that's so successful that doesn't get that win they wanted, yeah, they're invested in it. They've been working their fannies off. But I still expect them to step up and be that class person that they are, and to represent their family, themselves, their school, and their team and their teammates and that sort of thing. So she did a great job.
It's easier said than done, though.
Oh yeah, we watched.
I'm not going to put anybody on blast. I'm not going to point it out, but there was a finalist that got beat. The girl that absolutely took it to her reached down to kind of, help her up, and she threw her arm around, just kind of threw her arm away and, reacted a little, maybe in the opposite fashion, right. I would say. And so it's not as easy. It's not easy. It's harder than maybe for some people, but that's what makes what Katie Biscaglia did that much better. Like right. You were saying.
And we can point out lots of instances where that happened, but I can remember one, and you'll appreciate this one too, KJ. I can remember one that happened that I was devastated. I'm in the stands and I'm devastated because I thought it was a wrong call. And yet the wrestler, I'll mention his name. I believe it was Bo Lombardi. I don't think it was Rocky. I think, do you remember that instance? The official made a very, very, very late stall call.
Yep.
And he stood, cost him the match, and stood up, shook hands, and walked off like a champ, man. So so there's those other instances that we've seen through the years that did what Biscaglia did. So, yeah. Anyway, I just remember that Lombardi one. That was really – I was so impressed with how he handled that. Same here. Same with Katie Biscaglia.
Want to mention one other performance from Raccoon River Valley. It kind of crosses over with one of our area wrestlers. Kate Seary from Linmar reached the finals for the first time, ended up a runner-up at 115, had a great tournament, had two pins, and then a major decision to get to the finals for the first time. Finishes with over 150 wins in her career. Four-time state medalist. I think she's a three-time MVC champ, four-time regional champ maybe. Certainly really has set the standard for Linmar. But she lost in the finals to Addison McGinnis of Raccoon River Northwest. The name sounds familiar. It should. She's the daughter of Jeff McGinnis, the former City High four-time state champ, two-time NCAA champ at Iowa, and now the Simpson women's head coach. Of course, her mom, a fantastic athlete, somebody that I went to school with at Cedar Rapids, Washington, Jamie Strauss McGinnis. Jamie was a state champion swimmer, was a dominant swimmer, competed at the University of Iowa. But Addison McGinnis, a sophomore for Raccoon River Northwest, pinned her way to the semifinals, knocked off the number one seed, Lauren Witt from Cedar Falls, 4-1, and then got a first period pin to win a championship. So certainly one heck of a championship pedigree there, and Addison McGinnis coming away with a title.
I did not know that her mom was from West. So that's information for me. Back to the Linmar situation. You think of the girls that kind of led the way for Siri, and that, like Jelinek, Ellie Jelinek kind of got the ball rolling. So, some of these teams right now are getting maybe their first state medalist ever, or maybe even their first state qualifier ever. And that's what you need to help build your program. When you can see that your teammate, your friend has done that same thing, now you can aspire to do that same thing as well. And that's how you build on that inside the room. And now you got to, a finalist, and their teammates can look and say, yeah, she did it, I can do it too. So, I think at Jefferson had their first state medalist, sanctioned one anyway. And,
yep.
So with Josephine Budadera. So, that's neat to see those programs, take that next step.
Yep. since you mentioned that, kind of seeing your teammate do things really kind of fits with Linmar. Chloe Adamson, series training partner, both of them talked about this. They really kind of pushed each other to get better. Chloe Adamson was a qualifier at 125 last year because you had Siri and then you had Allie Jelinek at 15 and 20. So she was kind of wrestling up to get into the lineup. She was a state qualifier, but this year she ends up getting third. And that's where that teammate thing that you're talking about kind of comes into where, oh, hey, they're doing it. I can do it down at 120. More natural weight for her. She finished the season 46-6 and placed third, reaching the semifinals there before losing to Abigail Meyer and then bouncing back with two big wins. So good for her. Brielle Park, she finishes a great career as well. She finishes third. Her only loss was to Denisha Watson. I believe that was Waterloo's first champ. So Brielle Park, that was her only setback in the quarters, and then she won four straight, which is hard to do, to get third. And then Aurora Lloyd at 190 placed eighth for Linmar. To address what you said with Jefferson, Josephine Budadera, you said nailed it, the first sanctioned state medalist that Jefferson has had. I think the blood round win that she had was also her 100th career win. So the first to do that since
the season was
sanctioned.
Yeah, I think it was her quarterfinal win that put her into the semis, maybe. So either way, she became a medalist then.
I don't think she made the semis.
Oh, she didn't. Quarters, yeah. Okay, it was blood round. Okay.
She won her first round match, lost in the quarters, and then won in the consolation over a girl from MOC Floyd Valley.
And that's what happens when you're trying to follow when you're out in Wyoming.
No, that's the cool thing too is we had three Metro teams with their first medalist in addition to Budadera.
Right.
Cedar Rapids, Washington had their first medalist with Serenity Malone at 190. She lost to the eventual state champ in the first round. Then she won two straight to get under the award stand, including beating the number 7 and the number 1 seeded wrestlers on the backside, which is quite a feat.
Yeah. Wow.
And then won her 7th place match over Cadence Hagen from Boone, won by fall. So both Jefferson and Washington with their first state medalists this year. Kennedy had two reach the award stand. Olivia Hollum got 6th at 120. And then Meredith Comp was 7th at 140. Two that we've gotten to see this year. And then Marion had their first medalist, Cadence Pastor, I believe at 120, or I'm sorry, 115. Cadence Pastor at 115. She went 3-2 overall. I think this is her second or third trip to state, but first time on the award stand. She finished 7th at 115. So, some positives there for the Metro teams. Of course, Prairie, they had a nice tournament as well and a champ in Amelia Reyes at 235.
Right, and there's Reyes saying, hey, my teammate did it last year with Kinsey Childress. You know, there we go. It's that kind of domino effect. Or whatever you want to call it. My teammate did it, I can do it sort of thing. So,
and I love she was so dominant. Like, she wrestled like 40 some seconds in regional competition, right, to qualify. again. She had three pins in a 10-1 major decision at state. Wow. Finished 43-1. The thing that I really got a kick out of talking to her, or really loved hearing, was she made it to the quarterfinals last year, got beat by Ella Brown of Kennedy, who is an outstanding multi-time medalist for Kennedy. Lost to her in the quarters and then lost her wrestle back. So was a win away from the podium, didn't make it. She said, I wanted this so bad last year, didn't get it. All summer long, wrestling room. That's what she did. Went right back, worked her butt off all summer long, went through the off season, was focused on getting better. And what happens? She reaps the rewards of all that hard work. 43-1, having an outstanding season, and now as a junior, has a state title and can come back like Mackenzie Childers. Could be a two-timer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very cool. Congratulations to not only her, but her coaches and her teammates as well that helped her achieve that.
Yep, and she had two other teammates make the podium. Louisa Mead, 145, was fourth, and then Addison Bowman at 170 was sixth as well. A couple other performances just to kind of note, Ava Yara, at 190 for Iowa City West. She was the number 9 seed coming in. She made it to the finals. She's battled injuries the last 2 years. And I think that came into play there in the finals. I think she had a injury default there in her championship match at 190 as well. On the 1A side, you know, Denver.
Wow.
Oh, but I do want to mention the Benton community. Benton community had a couple place winners in Lizzie Wolf and Lena DeMoss. Wolf finished third at 145, and then DeMoss finished fourth at 155. So Benton coming away with two champs, but. On the 1A side, you know, Denver, they came in with five wrestlers, four of them in the finals, and they end up winning the team title by two over Eddyville Blakesburg Fremont. What, you know, you talk about quality over quantity, I guess that's a good example.
Yeah, I remember back, it's been a long time ago now, on the boys' side, Clinton coming in with, was it four wrestlers, I think? And they had, they might even have four champs or something. Something
really
very similar to that. That was back when Danny Knight was wrestling. And
I was going to ask if it was the Dan Knight era.
Yeah, it was. And they, I think they won it with just four wrestlers or something like that.
Wow.
But Denver, wow, by 2 points. Yeah, that's crazy. And three champs and, of course, one upset. And, you know, what a team they have for sure.
When you look at kind of the area teams, you know, Mount Vernon finishing towards the top as well. You know, you had Osage getting third, then Mount Vernon was fourth, East Buck fifth, West Liberty, who I think only had three, East Buck and West Liberty, I think only had three qualifiers each. Finish out the top six. But East Buck had three wrestlers, two champs, three finalists. They went, it was insane. They went like 11-1 throughout the tournament. And of those 11 wins, I think nine of them were pins. And holy one cow. Of them was a tech fall.
Jeez.
I mean,
what a tournament. Jeez.
It was a fantastic tournament. They ended up getting titles from Taylor Stiefel and then Brooklyn Graham, who won an overtime battle there. But, boy, you know, this was a team that competed with the big schools when it was just one class. split classes. They win a team title. Now their numbers are down a little bit, but you still see the quality there where you take three and they're all wrestling in the finals. And you put together a record like that with the dominance as well. I mean, it was pretty impressive.
Right. I would see before they split, had two divisions, I would see East Buck at the Anamosa tournament. And that was a killer tournament because you had Cedar Falls, you had Pleasant Valley, you had East Buck. And they are very, very competitive. And those girls came out and got after it. So, yeah, they've had a good program for a long time now.
Yep. And then Mount Vernon, you know, they had a couple in the finals. They had a handful of medalists. Gracie Pinckney coming away with a championship at 170, where she got a fall over the top seed, Brixia Garcia Vasquez, in 358. You know, that was big for her. Her teammate Adeline Wisner lost in the 145 pounder to Stiefel of East Buck. Two practice partners, the two friends. I really enjoyed this story when I wrote about Kate Martin and Kirsten Swart, the 105 and 110 pounders for Mount Vernon, who made it to the semis together. Practice partners, they almost kind of look alike a little bit. Weren't even friends, didn't know each other until the beginning of last season when practice started. And, of course, they're about the same size, so coaches paired them together. They start working out together, wrestling together, became friends and pushed each other. Both made to the semis, both placed fourth for Mount Vernon. Stories like that, I really enjoy seeing just the bond made through wrestling and then seeing them both succeed, reaching the podium. Mount Vernon also had a medalist in Kaylee Kinsel. So five of their seven qualifiers reaching the podium. Kinsel finished seventh at 155. But good tournament for Mount Vernon overall and a championship from Pinckney.
Right. And I'm going to do a little advertisement here. If you don't subscribe to the Gazette, you should. Because KJ, awesome job in company. Getting all of the information here. And not only that, you get the boys wrestling, obviously. It's the Scores and More page that you know, back in the day I used to scour. I'm sure lots of young guys did. Baseball stats and all sorts of things. So good job, Gazette and KJ.
Well, thanks. We had a great team. We had some great images. Our producer, Amir Prelberg, Savannah Blake, Gazette photographer. They had some great images from tournament. Make sure to get to the gazette.com. Check out those photos. Really documented this tournament. And it's awesome. Some great shots there. Want to mention, too, maybe kind of buried the lead in our area for 1A. But Chloe Sanders of Vinton-Shelsburg, we've talked about her and her accomplishments this season, where you officiated her 200th win. She finished with 220 victories in her career, 58-0 this season. She comes away with her first state title, winning the 135-pound bracket. She beat Anna Arrear of West Delaware, who became a two-time finalist as well, so great feat for her and the Hawks. But she, Sanders won 14-1, her first trip to the final since her freshman year, and then capped off her career with a state title. You could almost see the relief a little bit afterwards, and she talked about that. But it was a great – I think her coach, Brent Corcoran, said it perfectly. It's a perfect finish to a great career.
Right. And I'm going to expand it a little bit beyond Chloe. That Sanders family, when they came to Vinton well, I don't know how many years ago, 4 or 5 or whatever, at least that, that I'm aware of anyway, they really revived that, that Vinton, both boys and girls programs. They, I mean, that Sanders Cooper was a champ, wasn't he?
At least a finalist.
Finalist, yeah. And
I can't remember.
So, and then I can't remember the really brother's name now. Sorry. But that's, it's the Sanders family just done such a nice job in the Vinton area wrestling wise. So kudos to that family.
And Jason Sanders, the dad, in the corner there, they got to share some of that, that moment, as well. I think I have a video of, the two of them hugging a couple times after, after her victory and signing the board and then hugging again. Pretty emotional moment there. Pretty cool to see that. Yeah, like you said, good people there with that family. And Vinton's pretty fortunate that they came to town.
Yeah, yeah. As I feel like I am. It's been fun to watch them. So, yep.
Yeah, and that also have to mention Lenny Gissick of Alburnett finished third in that bracket. So we had an all area 1-2-3 there at 135 pounds. I know they crossed paths a couple times throughout the season. So, but good representation there in at 135 from the area. So any other highlights or anything that stood out to you from the girls tournament?
Nothing on the girls side, but I got a couple of things here that I wanted to chat with. One, a very brief teed up with Briggs. So here's my beef with not even wrestling, but with the Olympics going on now. Yesterday, they're advertising, USA Channel is advertising, we're going to show the Corey, the curling match, you know, the gold medal curling match. And so it's going to be on at 11 o'clock. And so I watched the previous one, that's the bronze medal match. And then they start the USA Channel starts the curling and they show about the very first, I don't even know what they call it, round. And then, you know, I think they slide 8 of them or 10 of them or whatever. I don't know curling very well. So it was fun to watch. And then they said, okay, if you want to watch the rest of it, you have to go to the Peacock channel. Or Paramount Plus, or whatever the channel is. Yep. And I'm like, what? I've been waiting to watch this. So that's my beef. Doggone it, NBC and USA. So, all right. That's my tee it up with Briggs. I got to pay to watch TV I'm already paying for.
can I piggyback on something here? Sure. And it just, when you mentioned it, you know, there's been a few times where there have been things that you've wanted to watch, and then you realize that it's shifted to a paying service.
Yeah.
You remember What Killed Boxing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pay-per-view, these big pay-per-view kind of shifting to HBO where it wasn't readily available, where they took sports out of the mainstream.
Right.
Where it was all, you know, you couldn't watch high level or championship fights on network television anymore. Okay. Why is it different? I know technology's different, and I'm probably sounding like an old man yelling at clouds from my front lawn, you know, to the Grandpa Simpson meme. But why is this different? Why do we as fans kind of give in now when before we didn't?
Right.
It was like, okay, if you're taking it away from me, then that's on you. I'm not going to chase you down to watch it. When you come back to me, then we'll talk. Now it's, oh, you're taking it away. I better go follow you to whatever. Oh, yeah, I'll spend another $12.99 per month for this streaming service that I'll watch once every 6 months when there is an event that I care about without any real, you know, there's no consequence for these providers or these sports because they know people are going to just bite and go to it. And wrestling's done that a little bit. Yeah. And I know they talk about, oh, well, if you want to grow the sport, you got to pay for it. Well, do you?
You know, what was a little bit offsetting was they did it right in the middle of the match. The very first, you know, they got you going, and then your little boy has some candy. now I'm hooked, right? First one's free. Okay. Anyway, but you know, I'm going to go back even further, KJ. And back in the day with boxing, we used to have to listen to it on the AM radio when it was Ali versus Frazier or whoever, you know.
Right.
And then we didn't get to see it until that 2 months later on Wide World of Sports when they aired it or whatever, you know. And the same with eventually they started that with wrestling. We got to see highlights in the summer, you know, 2, 3, 4 months later.
Right.
And then eventually it became, you know, it got on TV, which I'm glad it is now. But, you know, so yeah, you're right 100%. So, all right.
I didn't mean to hijack your teeing it up there.
No, that's good. Good discussion. Okay, here's a quick one for you, KJ. It's our five blind rankings. Let's do this now. Five blind rankings. It has nothing to do with wrestling. This has ranked the foods that start with the letter S. It's blind. So
S. All right.
Letter S. Okay, so the first one, I got to have something to write with here. Okay, the first one is scrambled eggs, 1 through 5. Where do you put scrambled eggs?
Okay, so this is going to sound like a weird question, but is it just plain scrambled eggs?
Yeah, because it's, yes.
Is it scrambled eggs, like, because I use hot sauce?
Oh, you can put whatever you want on it, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But it's not hard, over, you know, it's not different kinds of eggs. It has to be scrambled eggs.
Okay, all right. So scrambled eggs... That's how I prefer eating them. I eat a lot of them now because they're kind of diabetic friendly. So I'm going to go 3 just because they become kind of a staple for me in the morning.
Okay. There you go. All right.
So right in the middle.
2. There you go. Number 2, shrimp.
5.
I wondered if you were a shrimp.
Oh, I am not a shrimp guy. No. And okay. I've tried to eat shrimp. Like shrimp cocktail to make myself feel like I'm highbrow at times, and it nope. 5. That was easy. Okay.
Yeah, and for me that would be a high one because I love shrimp.
Really? Okay. So we're different ends of the spectrum on that.
Yeah. Okay. Third one here, spaghetti.
Oh,
your diet might affect that.
Yeah, but before I kind of had to cut down on carbs and watch the sugars and stuff that's big in pasta, I love spaghetti. I still love spaghetti. I still love all kinds of Italian food. What am I? Italian food's probably my number one. But I just got a feeling there's something else coming. So I'm going to put it at 2 since I don't get to eat it as much anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to put it, and by the way, I've had chickpea spaghetti. It's not the same.
I've had it too. Yeah, I know.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, number four is a smoothie.
I put that at 4. I'm hoping the last one is a good one.
I think you did well. I think you did well.
I'm not a big smoothie. My daughter, Katie, is a huge smoothie. Get her some protein powder and some fruit and another thing. She uses our Ninja blender quite a bit when she's home. So
good for her. That's good. You can throw in all sorts of vegetables and not even taste them. All right, number 5, steak. That's gotta be number 1.
Number one. Yeah.
That worked out all right for you?
Yeah. I think that worked out perfect, actually. That was one of the ones that kind of everything kind of fell in the right spot.
Right. So number one, steak. Number two, spaghetti. Number three, scrambled eggs. Number four, smoothie. And your least favorite shrimp, number five.
Yeah.
Good job.
So that was cool. All right. I'll have to find a fun one for you for next week.
All right.
So, all right, let's hop into the state duels here that were held Saturday at Extreme Arena. You know, be honest with you, kind of went according to maybe how expected, where 3A and 1A kind of turned out to, you know, you had the top two teams that kind of expected to have, and then 2A was wide open a little bit. You had Southeast Polk winning in 3A, obviously a third straight title for them, and I can't remember. I think it's like 8 of the last 14. Don Bosco continued their streak, but they had a tough battle with Jessup. And it's Eddyville, Blakesburg, Fremont. Boy, I was so impressed watching them compete that, you know, it was fun. All three rounds against Alburnett, against Clarion, Goldfield, Dowds, and then against Decorah. Them coming away with a victory in the championship duel against Decorah 37-33. That was one of the most fun duels I remember seeing in the state finals.
Yeah, that's and then we kind of expected that at 2A, that was going to be the one where you might see an upset. And, you know, EBF, listen to me, would you? EBF beat CGD. In the semifinals, they beat Clarion, Goldfield, Dowds, 41-25, so a nice win there for them. And then, like you said, upset 37-33 over Decorah. So, and then, you know, I'm going to jump over to 3A. The 3A Southeast Polk is just so good. 57-11 over Indianola. Indianola beat Waukee Northwest 33-32. That had been exciting in the semifinals to make the finals. But, so a good win there for Indianola in the semis, but Southeast Polk is just so much better. I would say this about 1A. I didn't expect that it was going to be that close. So it really turned my head with Jessup. How about you?
Right. I thought coming in, I thought obviously there's Don Bosco, but I thought there was a huge gap between them and Jessup, and I thought there was an even bigger gap between Jessup and the rest of the field. I would not have been, you know, the saying I like to refer to or reference all the time is predictions only prove how much you don't know. And I would not have predicted that being the battle that it was and being decided in the final weight class. I mean, that just tells you how strong Jessup really is to give Don Bosco a go like that. But that was something. You know, I did a feature. Check out a feature on thegazette.com. Talk to the Jessup folks about, you know, the progress that they've made. You know, it's hard to believe that 2 years ago was their very first time in state duels. But the senior class has been fantastic, really has ushered in that new success. Last year, they won the quarterfinal for the first time, and they got fourth, improved from fifth the first year they were there. And then now they're getting into the finals. But when I was talking to them about that, they're like, we're not just wanting to get to the finals. We think we can go with Don Bosco. They were saying that. And sure, like some of it is just maybe, you know, kind of hope or positive affirmation stuff, but – you get a feeling that they really believed and kind of remembered thinking, boy, they, you know, they're saying, hey, we want them. We feel we can knock them off. And boy, they had a chance. And I mean, they, what is it? Just kind of looking here, won six matches, all with bonus points. You know, had a couple matches that were really close. You know, look at Blake Irvine beating Gavin Bell 10-7. You know, you never know if that goes the other way. You know, that ties things up.
Right. A couple of them that stand out to me, KJ. At 120, Aiden Bergman from Jessup beat Hendrik Schwab. But he didn't just beat him. He beat him 16-2. He was major, one point from almost a tech. And those guys have wrestled each other. Last year, Schwab beat Bergman 5-3. And then this year so far, Bergman has pinned and almost tech fall Schwab there. So that one really stood out to me. And then you go down to the final match of the duel. Kyler Salas, I believe, was a state champ last year, wasn't he?
Yep.
State champ won a 5-2 decision over Dax Youngblood. I mean, that's a good 5-2. Is it score when the meat's on the line? That's a good win. Good, I guess, loss. You don't want to have a loss when it happens, but that's a good showing by Youngblood over, you know, with the state champ. So I bring that up to echo your, they believe they can compete with them right now. And, you know, in some instances they are, they're right there. So right. I did also hear that, not to put any excuses out there, but I did hear that Bosco had some flu going through. I don't know how healthy you were. But anyway, right. That happens on every team. So that you could say that probably about every team. So
yeah, they had a forfeit there in the upper weights as well. You know, that factors in, but Jessup had a forfeit too, so that balances out. The one thing you mentioned, Bergman, and one thing I want to point out about Aiden Bergman, he got injured at the state duels last year. He's a former state medalist. He got injured in state duels and wasn't able to compete in the postseason last year. He has been a man on a mission this season. He certainly has, and I think that's a good example of it. I'm really looking forward to seeing him down in Des Moines and what he can accomplish, because I'm sure there's kind of a hole there in the middle of him after having last year kind of taken away from him due to injury. So
right, and I would expect those two to be seeded 1 and 2 and meet each other in the finals maybe.
Yep. I want to go back to 2A. A couple things in the 2A bracket. Actually, let's finish with 2A. Let's go to 3A really quick. The two area schools that we had, Linmar finished fifth. They lost to Indianola 46-24. They had come in. They had won like their last 10 duels. You know, this was a team that was ranked 10th, knocked off the number 6 seed. They gave Indianola a pretty good go there in the first round. Indianola just kind of pulled away for the win. But then Linmar avenged a loss to Iowa City West in the consolation side, 44-32. And then they closed things out, beating Dallas Center Grimes 44-31 for fifth. The Lions, so I'll do the math. I think they won 12 of their last 13 duels this season. They really got healthy, and they're a team that where they're sitting at right now, I'm really excited to kind of see what they do with districts in the state coming up. Iowa City West closed off their performance with a win. They beat Pleasant Valley 46-24 to finish seventh. In their first trip since, what was it, 2014?
Right.
There. And, you know, they gave Waukee Northwest a big push. They lost 41-33 to the number 3 seed. And, of course, Waukee Northwest ended up finishing third, beating Dowling. They had a big pin, I think their 13-pounder. And they don't have Diego Roberti. Oh, actually, they do. They changed it. They had the wrong guy listed originally. But Diego Roberti with a pin over Carew Christensen in 44 seconds in that 113 match. That was big. Carew Christensen just dropped down to 113, is ranked number one ahead of Roberti and Walikot of Dowling, who had beaten Roberti by decision in December. And now Roberti pinned Christensen in 44 seconds in that duel. So that was huge. And maybe a sign of things to come for Roberti here as the postseason starts.
Right. And Lindmar, who the MVC Super Meet champs. And so they're coming on. They really seem to be peaking right at the right time. They had, right, like you said, nice wins over West. And Dallas Center Grimes is a tough team. So that, come back and get fifth, they wrestled, or they finished two spots above their seed. I think they're seeded seventh, finished fifth. Right. So big, nice showing there. Iowa City West has that young team, so they're just going to get better and better as not only this season goes on, but next season as well, and so on.
Agreed. So now let's get to 2A here. Overall, there's one thing about the championship. Well, before we get to the championship, all right, Independence. The big thing with Independence, it was had that rematch, that Highway 20 clash between Independence and West Delaware. We watched West Delaware beat them at Independence at the end of January. This time, Independence kind of flips the script and wins 35-29, first time in like 12 duels. Snapped, I think, a 12-duel losing streak to their rival, West Delaware. Kieran Meyer at 106 had lost the decision in the regular season duel. He got a pin to kick things off for Independence, so an early spark. And then Cam Kramer at 150, he lost the decision to Croy Gudenkoff in the regular season, came back and won by decision here, so they were able to flip those two around. And then the Eddie brothers with wins to close it out. Actually, Braylon Bieber, Carter Eddie, Gable Eddie finished with three decisions there to finish it out, and they won 35-29. So that was big for Indy, despite losing the second round duel to Decorah. But that kind of stood out. And then Albernette coming through after, having a hard-fought loss to Eddieville Blakesburg Fremont, who won it. They beat Algona 43-23 and then beat West Delaware 39-27. So moving up a class didn't bother Albernette at all.
That's just what I was thinking. I'm thinking, Albernette, maybe they might have finished higher in 1A, but maybe not. So, I mean, they compete with any. Maybe throw them into 3A even. And, right. They would do all right. But, again, Coach Rush has that town and team, they're doing so well right now. It's fun to watch them.
So Decorah gets to the finals for the third time in school history. The reason why that stands out to me, they've only been to the state duels for three times. And this is their first time in 30 years. So runner up in 95-96, 30 year break, runner up in 2026. I just think they've done a great job there in Decorah, even though they didn't finish the way they wanted to. I walked away very impressed with Decorah's team and many of the wrestlers in the lineup.
Right. And so, you pat yourself on the back for a second and be a little bit disappointed, I suppose, since it was so close, 37-33. But put that behind you, full steam ahead with the districts and state coming up.
So the biggest match against Eddieville Blakesburg Fremont came at 138. Have you had a chance to watch that match?
Yeah, that's the one you were talking about that just had a huge amount of points scored. What a fun. See, that's high school wrestling, and you don't see that in college. That's why high school wrestling to me has always been so much fun, because they just lay it out on the line and put it out there. They're not so guarded. Not that I dislike college wrestling, but I love high school wrestling. This is a perfect
And you got to give props to Caden Kirkpatrick of Eddyville Blakesburg and Will Larson of Decorah. They came out and they were throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at each other. 12-6, Larson led after the first period. Then they combined to score 22 points in the second. You know, and it wasn't just rolling around, from back to back. I mean, this was, escape, takedown, escape, other person takedown, get out, takedown, two near fall, a reversal, near fall, then another two-point turn, then an escape, then another reversal and near fall for the other person. And it just this seesaw back and forth between the two, 49 points in 5.5 minutes. It's crazy.
Wow.
and you can tell they're both exhausted. Here's the thing I keep bringing up, Briggsy, that I think is kind of funny, but they scored 22 points in the second period, right? I think Kirkpatrick scored 11. I think Larson scored 10. But Kirkpatrick scores a takedown probably with about 20 seconds to go. And the last 15 seconds, they are just standing at center mat, staring at each other, just kind of moving their feet and they're 6 feet apart, not doing anything. And I'm totally fine with it because they were exhausted. occasionally they look over at the clock just to see it tick down and then look at each other. But they deserve that little break. And I thought it was kind of funny, all this action, and then, time out for just let it click down. We'll get back at it in the third period, and they did.
Yeah. Community break, I guess, for the two of them. We're gearing up for the third period.
I think the fans needed that break, too, because the swells of cheers and emotion going on from the mat to the benches to the stands, it was crazy. It was fun even following it, from the press row. You got to credit Kirkpatrick. He gets taken down, so he's down 29-18, I think, at the time. And he kind of hits a reversal but doesn't break away, right? So he turns in and then locks up a throw and just goes for it. And talking to him afterwards, he just said at that point it was go big or go home. And he went big and threw Larson to his back, and you could tell they're just exhausted. They're empty. There's nothing left there, and he was able to get a pin. But that ends up being a 10-point swing in a duel that was decided by 4 points.
Right.
And Dimitri Boyer talked about how you can teach wrestling, you can't teach fight. And this kid, everybody knows wrestling. His team, they fight. And he said 138 was the perfect example. King Kirkpatrick was the epitome of this team and the fight that they have, and that's what sets them apart. And I tell you what, the way they're loaded, especially through like 113 to 144, if they have that same intensity and drive that they had at state duels, and we've seen them at Independence and Mount Vernon throughout the year, they certainly are in position for a title sweep.
Right. And if you're on the losing end of that match as a coach, all you can do is go over and hug your kid, because he gave it everything he's got. And that's all you can ever ask when a wrestler steps out on the mat for you.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because at that point it could have been real, real easy to just give in, because let me see if my math is right. I think that pin made it 25-4, and then Eddieville Blakesburg Fremont got a pin from Landon Davis at 145 to go up 31-4. Right? That's halfway through. You're down by 27. But Decorah, they didn't give in. They got a tech from Grant Knutson at 150, and then they had pins from Kason Tyler, William Fullhart, Thomas Sexton to pull them within, 34-27 with two matches to go. They ended up finishing with a pin from heavyweight Henry Brinsas, but it was Logan Gardner at 215 for EBF. They got a decision over Ethan Kennan, 6-0. Iced it with a takedown in the final seconds. But this was a duel that, despite all that, really up until, final seconds of 215, they were still in it.
Right.
They still had their chance and really battled back. So kudos to the Vikings.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fun. That's what is so fun about the state duels right there. And yep. And we don't know if there was any shifting or whatever. Sometimes you see that as well. That,
true.
You know, to try and get better matchups, that it just makes it fun. It's just it's a fun team experience. It doesn't get any better than that duel right there, the state duels.
So now we head into the district meets this week. In Class 3A, just looking at the sites, Ankeny, Bettendorf, Cedar Falls, Council Bluffs, Abe Lincoln, Iowa City High, Fort Dodge, Marshalltown, and Norwalk are the hosts. Just for our area schools, I'll mention that Linmar heads to Ankeny, Xavier and Iowa City West head to Bettendorf. Western Dubuque, Iowa City Liberty, and Marion go to Cedar Falls.
Three.
Jefferson Kennedy are at City High.
Four.
Then we have Cedar Rapids, Washington, and Clear Creek, Amana at Marshalltown. And then Cedar Rapids Prairie is the lone area team at Norwalk.
Six districts. The seven or however many schools are going. Six districts. That's crazy. I've never, ever heard or even – interesting.
That's the thing. I know we were talking about this before, but that's the thing that gets me. I've never – I think maybe three. I can remember maybe a couple area schools hosting and then maybe somebody getting sent to Marshalltown or Waverly Shell Rock or, Bettendorf or North Scott or something like that. But I don't ever remember – the Metro teams being dispersed the way they are. And it kind of that Joe, I say this tongue in cheek, it kind of, that's not a district. That's not what districts are.
It's groupings.
It's groupings. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So
and maybe they've got it right. I don't know. I didn't break it down to see if they've got, got the teams kind of split up like they should. I know when my last year coaching, our district had 30 some ranked guys, and the one out west had four, something crazy like that. It was not, there's years when that's happened. So maybe they got it right this year. I don't know.
So maybe that'll be a positive. Here are just some of the other. Some of the other teams in those local or districts with local teams. So when you talk about maybe some of the better teams in the district with Linmar at Ankeny, obviously you've got Ankeny, Ames, Carlisle, Dallas Center, Grimes are there in that field. At Bettendorf, you've got Bettendorf, Iowa City West, Pleasant Valley, Xavier is in that as well. At Cedar Falls, Waverly Shell Rock, I think, is kind of head and shoulders above the rest. Then you've got Western Dubuque in there as well. Southeast Polk heads over to Council Bluffs, Abe Lincoln. Waukee's in that one as well, but obviously that's Southeast Polk is in position where they can send off 14 to Des Moines, actually. The field at City High, kind of, it's Ankeny, Centennial, Burlington. We mentioned Jefferson, Kennedy, and City High. Then you've got Davenport Central, Newton, and North Scott. So Ankeny, Centennial coming over, that's kind of interesting. Prairie heads to Norwalk, where you've got Norwalk, West Des Moines Valley, and Waukee Northwest. And then Marshalltown, you've got Hempstead and Dowling kind of leading the way, maybe with Johnston being in Clear Creek and Amana being in that third spot there at Marshalltown.
I'm looking at that Norwalk and one, and I see ADM, and I think, how are they 3A? But if you've ever driven out there, that growth out west of Des Moines is just crazy. So I guess I get it, but I still think of them as a smaller school.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if they maybe share with somebody nearby that puts them over that threshold. But I also know that Xavier actually qualified as a 2A school on the BEDS documents.
Yeah, they did that last year, which is why that's why there's 9 teams in the Norwalk district, because Xavier does not elect us Russell down.
Gotcha.
So it kind of throws a monkey wrench in the works there. Because that happened at the I think Jefferson hosted last year, and there were 9 teams there at Jefferson.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Let's look at 2A. We talked about kind of the groupings there. Look at District 1, where you've got Albernett and Mount Vernon heading all the way over to Ballard, with North Polk, Perry, Roland Story, Van Meter, and Woodward Granger in the mix. So a little bit of a haul for Albernett and Mount Vernon heading over to Ballard.
Right. We're looking about 120 miles or more from Mount Vernon to Ballard. So
yeah,
I didn't check Albernett. They're probably about the same.
Benton Community gets the host. They'll have Dyke, New Hartford, Grinnell, Knoxford, Nevada, Solon, South Tama, and Wilton. Wilton certainly one of the top teams there. Benton Community got a couple really good wrestlers, including Brady Patterson. They're at 144. Solon, they've got those bracketed ranked wrestlers, and Anderson Osgood at 106, and then Lucas Feuerbach at heavyweight there for the Spartans.
Yeah, they're the bookends, the lightest and heavy.
DeWitt Central has some area teams where you've got Anamosa, Davenport Assumption, Comanche, DeWitt, obviously, Maquoketa, Monticello, Mount Pleasant, West Liberty. That could be pretty competitive when you look at Assumption. Anamosa's got some good kids. West Liberty as well, including Briggs Collins. In the mix there, Caden Wheely, also. But you got to put your money on somebody named Briggs, right?
That's right. That's my boy.
any other districts there? For me, Independence looks like a good one, with North Fayette Valley coming to town. Union has some really good individuals. When you look at Coy Mailer, Caden Jones, Luke Stratton in the mix.
Yeah, you've got 12 districts in 2A, so there's a lot more to digest here, I guess. I'm looking and seeing Fort Madison in 2A, and that just doesn't seem right.
Right.
Someone had to get bumped out when ADM came in. So.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, they had the Centerville there. Of course, we talked about Eddyville, Blakesburg, Fremont. They're in that field as well. We'll be interested to see how many people they get across. Decorah, they're they're right up there. They head to Osage. You got Charles City, Crestwood, New Hampton, Turkey Valley, Oline, Osage, Dubuque, Waller, and Waukon. So the core, I think that's a pretty favorable draw. I know Osage is in there, but I don't think it's quite the same Osage team as they've had in some of the previous years. And that might be a tough one there, or might not be that tough of a one there. They could get a pretty good number to Des Moines, I think.
You know, I don't know. There's so many teams there in the past have had great success, you know. Charles City, Crestwood, New Hampton, Turkey Valley, Waukon. I mean, throw those in. But I don't know how they are this year. So I would think Decorah is going to walk out with quite a few qualifiers.
West Delaware's got BCLU, WSH, Center Point, Urbana, Iowa Falls, Alden, Tipton, Vinton, Shelbsburg, West Branch, and West Delaware. You know, the Hawks should get quite a few through. West Branch has got a chance to get a good number through when you've got Humphrey and the Gateses, Cash Hatfield. Vinton, Shelbsburg has Jackson Parmater. You know, they're at 106 that, you know, we might see a rematch of Osgood and Parmater in the finals of at state if everything goes to seed. And then Center Point Urbana's got a couple really good wrestlers. Danny Small at 215 really kind of stands out as well. And then Williamsburg hosts a district as well. With Cardinal, Davis County, Keokuk, Minneapolis, Burlington, Notre Dame, Washington, Iowa, and West Marshall. But
right, and I'm looking at that West Delaware. There's only seven teams in that. The I suppose that's because Xavier bumped up, but that West Delaware is going to be a competitive one, I think.
I think so too. I really do. Turning to 1A, just kind of. Looking, Don Bosco, the number one seed or number one team. Gosh, what do they have? Like seven or eight ranked number one guys or number two guys. They had the MFL Marmac, where there's Hudson, Maquoketa Valley, MFL Marmac, Postville, Riceville, Rockford, Southwind, Starmont, who I'm really anxious to see Keaton Moeller wrestle. Would like to see him kind of get back on top after having that knee injury that kept him out all last year after winning as a sophomore. He's a UNI recruit as well. And then Tripola is in that field. Kind of scouring for Jessup to see. I mean, I think Don Bosco would be able to advance quite a few folks. Oh, they sent Jessup to Sigourney. Where you've got BGM, Columbus County, or Community, Winfield, Mount Union, Highland, Iowa Valley, which it's got three really good, three or four really good wrestlers, including the Hoyts and Nolan Kriegel, the Wise Muscatine, Pleasantville, Sigourney, Kyoto, Van Buren, and Wapello in the field there. So, if Jessup's going to want to compete with Don Bosco, they're going to have to get as many guys through there at Sigourney. But I think after watching them this weekend and kind of seeing the field, they have a good chance to take down quite a few people to Des Moines.
Right. And is this the third year that they have combined sectionals with district in 1 and 2A? So there's only district?
Yes.
I think it's the third year. And of course, yes. You're getting, you know, 10, 11 teams in a district, but a lot of those teams don't field full teams. So I think it's been a good move. And the coaches that I've talked to have thought it's been a good move as well. So, and it frees up last weekend for the state duels. So,
I think it's worked out well.
Yeah, I agree.
Just the last district I'll point out here, Belle Plaine, Durant, Lone Tree, Midland, New London, North Cedar, Iowa City, Regina, Springville, and Waco head to Lisbon on Saturday for a 1A district there. So Lisbon will get the host on Saturday. So a lot to dissect.
Yeah.
That went a little bit longer than we expected, but any final part, any parting words or final thoughts?
Stay healthy, everyone, so you can qualify if you're able and get to that state tournament.
Yep. Like to thank everybody for watching. Make sure to go to thegazette.com, check out all our content from last week, and then getting ready for districts and then our state preview stuff for next week. For Coach Briggs, for myself, I'd like to thank everybody for following us and watching us every week. Briggsy, why don't you go ahead and send us out?
Let's keep wrestling on the move.
Support local journalism and enjoy full access to the Green Gazette digital edition with a print subscription. Subscribe today at thegazette.com/subscribe.